Welcome to In the Cantor's Chair. On today's show, I am delighted to host my dear friend, Charlie Bernhardt. Charlie, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Benny.
You know, Charlie, this is very ironic. We are sitting across from each other at the table, but you really are in my seat, and you've been in my seat for so many years as a host, as bringing Chazanut and interesting guests and artists to the forefront. So it's very special and meaningful to me that we can actually do this and turn the tables on you.
Thank you.
Charlie, I want to go back to the beginning. Tell us a little bit about you, where you were born, something about your parents.
It's a lot in one breath, but I was born in Newark, New Jersey. My father was born in Romania, Bukovina, and my mother was from Newark, New Jersey. You know, Newark had 50, 60,000 Jews, and a lot of your listeners are not aware that there was a vibrant Jewish community in Newark, New Jersey. As a matter of fact, my public high school, 98% Jewish, came the Jewish holidays, the school was closed. I was raised in a kosher home. We observed the holidays, but it wasn't a strong home for Judaism. It was typical of that era, if you will. The Bovergers almost got me when I was 12 years old. They opened up a cheder in Newark, New Jersey. What happened was the rabbi could only speak Yiddish. You know, this was at the end of the war. In the end of the Second World War, they brought a lot of rabbis from Europe, no speaking English, and it was a disaster for me. So I was turned off, really, unfortunately, at the age of 10 and 12.
But thank God your history shows that you came back and you were inspired to a great music tradition, cantorial tradition. But before we talk about cantorial music, I want to talk about general music, because you have a love not only of cantorial, and you play on your show, I think now you have 2 hours, you'll tell us more, but over the years you've played different genres of Jewish music, am I correct?
Well, I think it's important, you know, as a person who has two major hobbies. My first hobby was collecting old Victrolas, which led into the cantorial. There's a long story that how that happened, but the cantorial was the major part because it touches the soul. For me, I'm not a learned in music. I don't have any degree in music. What I do is I listen. It either turns me on or it doesn't. It's just that simple. And I decided my second hobby of collecting records, as you are aware, I donated most of my records to the Israel Sound Archives in Jerusalem, 8,033 and a third vinyls, almost 4,000 cassettes, and some CDs, and of course the old 78s. But for me, the important thing was to share the music with others. There are people who have major collections and they sort of grab it to themselves. They don't want to share it. And you know what happens when they die? The kids come in and they can't get rid of it fast enough. And it's a shame, because while a person is alive, he should want to share and provide for the future. I don't know if you are aware that I met a young man, 22 years old, Elchanan, loves Chazanut. Absolutely loves Chazanut. And I've had him do a couple of shows on my program. And I told him, I said, I want to develop you into being my replacement, because at the age of, I'm 85, I'll be 86 soon, I'm aware that I'm not going to live forever. And I don't want this to die with me. I want it to continue. And I'm also trying to encourage a young fellow from Israel who was at Yeshiva to also take on some responsibilities of sharing the music.
Well, first of all, I don't plan on you going anywhere for a long time. So I'm glad that you're thinking about your legacy, but that's something that will hopefully we will be talking about in many years' time, not immediately. But okay, for now, I want to walk in with you in your mind's eye into a synagogue. And you're sitting in the pews and you're listening to the service. What is it about the cantor and the music that turns you on? What is it? How would you describe it? What does it do for you?
Well, we always talk about Jewish soul, that this is 2 hours of Jewish soul music and so forth. And I think that's what touches me. It touches my soul. And I am looking for it. And when it comes, it's such a relief. You know, you can't all be stars. So you have your expectations, and you have the realization that not everybody is going to be a help god or whoever is the star of that period. But it's also something in, you know what it is? The first thing you start with is that they have to believe the words that they're singing. And that's a problem, I think. So how can you sing properly if you just don't have the music and the ability to touch, which is, I think, most of the cantors. Most of the cantors do not touch my soul. But thank God we found through the years that we've been working with Cantors World and others, we have found that there is a reservoir of great talent, and it has to be worked on. It has to be explored. It has to be utilized. And we're always searching for that new voice, which we've just been listening to a young man who is really a new voice. It's exciting.
Charlie, you're referring to this young man, Nissim Sal, who's actually, he's relatively young. He's 37 years old and comes from a Hasidic background and is able to hit notes that are just not human, is how I would describe it. But he's very talented. And by the way, it gives hope, and we'll talk about it more later, for the future of Chazanut. But I want to talk to you for a moment about Chazanut of yesteryear. You know, there's this great rivalry. Who was greater, Koussevitzky, Rosenblatt, Bagley. He was also obviously a great Chazan, Beryl Chagi, all these Chazanim that you know on a first-name basis, so to speak. But what would you say? Where would your bet land? Who was the greatest Chazan who ever lived, if someone asked you that question?
I pass on that. I don't like to do that. Every song that they sing can't be a winner. It's the right piece at the right time. If there are 10 songs on a record, I always felt if there were one or two that touched my soul, I'm ahead of the game.
Right.
You know, it's wrong to expect every single song to touch the soul. And what can I say? I have my favorites. I am a big fan of Shmuel Malofsky. There's something in the way he approaches things. Of course, look, you've got Rosenblatt, and you've got Kvartan, and you've got Hirschman, who is underrated, I think, but he's super. And of course, we have Helfgott here in this day and age. These are the greats, but everyone cannot be great. They can be good, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be great.
So let me give you the question a little bit differently. If you had the option of meeting any cantor that passed away, who would you choose to go out to dinner with? And you cannot pass on this question.
It's tough because each one has a particular touch, that I'm looking for. And you can't just say he's the only one, the only star.
But I'm not saying the only one. I'm saying who is the one that you would come to as your first guest?
Well, I guess I'd go back to Malofsky.
And let's take Malofsky with us now on this journey. Let's say Malofsky is alive, right? We believe in the resurrection of the dead. Mashiach is going to come. And Malofsky walks into shul, to any synagogue that has a cantor. How do you think he would feel about the status of cantorial music today?
Very sad, to say the least. But, you know, even in the Golden Age, the cantors were not davening every Shabbos, and some of them were not even involved with congregations. They were stars, but they were stars in concerts and so forth, and special events. I don't know.
You've been to the Great Synagogue in Jerusalem?
Many times.
And you've sat there and you've heard the magnificent choir of Elie Jaffe and the Cantors, Cantor Hirschstück, now Adler, Kirschenbaum. When you sit there, and I assume you saw a fairly full room.
Yes.
When you were there. Does that give you hope that cantorial music is alive and will continue to live?
Yes. And the thing about the choir, I have this shtick about choirs. If you notice, all of the great cantors of the past, of the Golden Age, when they were 11, 12, 13 years old, they were singing in choirs. So at a very young age, it was touching their souls. Versus somebody who decides at the age of 22 or 23, I'm going to become a cantor, and has no background, no upbringing, why he wants to become a cantor, that's not the issue. The issue is, can you develop that versus a young fella who has been singing 100 or 200 songs in the presence of greatness? The greats always had the choirs around them, and Koussevitzky and whoever, and the choir was very, very important. And I've been very, very upset that here in the Jewish metropolitan area, or the metropolitan area where there's so many Jews, we haven't been able to come up with a choir. You've got the Johannesburg choir, you've got the choir in London, you've got South Africa and so forth. But we've not been able to, there is one excellent choir, of course, Chaimov, but other than that, there should be competing choirs also. And catching the youth at the right point.
Right. You make a very good point, though. All the chazanim, and I think to myself, my own experience, the way I got hooked into chazanis was my mother used to sing to me as a little boy, but I also joined the choir when I was a kid. And that's how I got to love the music and the atmosphere. So yes. It's very true what you're saying about choirs. And somewhat unfortunate that in New York City, the largest metropolitan area of Jews in the world, I would say, other than Israel, we can't put together. Maybe that's one of the things we need to do.
Yes.
Moving forward.
Yes.
So let's move on to Cantor's world.
Yes.
Do you remember how it started? And how would you describe Cantor's world to someone who was never there or never experienced what it did?
Well, I would describe it as two crazy guys who had a dream, and the dream came true. And it was something that was exciting and satisfying, and we were proud of what we were doing. And we had a carefree attitude about it. You, of course, are a master at putting things together. And I admire that so much, besides the fact that you're a fine chazan and all that. But you're a master at putting the show together in the details. And I've always been grateful that you're the one that has that responsibility and not me. But I think that it was just sad that we never touched somebody. We did something wrong. There are so many good charities around, and people don't view chazanis as a cause. A hospital is good, a yeshiva is good, but music, it doesn't have the same attraction, apparently, for those people who are used to donating large sums of money. So we never were able to proceed on that. And we ran out of money.
Yeah. Right. Do you remember the concerts when we filled the Metropolitan Opera Hall?
Oh, wow. Anybody who I still run into people who were there, and they say it was wonderful. It was beautiful. It was such a great, great event. It really was. Just to see all the Jews, mixture of every kind of Jew there. I don't think we could ever replicate that, but we could come close. I don't want to say never.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about meeting people. I've met people in the strangest of places that tell me, first of all, about you, Charlie, about your show. Oh, how's your partner Charlie doing? I used to listen to his radio show for years. And it brings them such joy. People like feel they're sharing with me this, like, the state secret. Like, it's just amazing. And I recall specifically, just before COVID, I was traveling to Palm Springs, California. And I was on the line for the TSA. And the TSA agent says to me, I think I recognize you from somewhere. And I was like, that's not, you're on that line, you don't necessarily want to be recognized by anyone. It turned out that the TSA agent is a lover of Chazanis, and he was at our concert, not at the one in the opera, but in the one right prior to that, that we did at Avery Fisher Hall with New York Philharmonic. And he was so touched. He was like, that was the greatest night of my life. And what's interesting, what you say about Chazanis, how you talk about soul music. A lot of people, when you ask them, what does cantorial music mean to you? They can't really formulate an exact answer. It's not an answer that you can quantify in words. It's a feeling. And Avram Fried once said to me, he said, you know, either you feel it or you don't feel it. And I've noticed that in my own life. Like my kids, you know, they look at Chazanis, they roll their eyes. Avram Fried told me about his own kids. They look at Chazanis and, you know, it doesn't have the same meaning. Though, by the way, talking about him, he could have made a great Chazan. He has so much talent and is such a mensch. So I certainly understand what you're saying about Chazanis really being soul music. And it's something that you have to come even more so to a synagogue than to a concert hall to experience. You really have to sense it in your bones. And as it relates to Cantor's world, you know, I often think, and we've spoken about this, Charlie, that if we had a large board, a committee, I don't know. I mean, we may have done some of what we did, but I don't think we would have gotten as far and as great a reach as we did with the weekends, with the concerts, with the Philharmonic. I remember when we were going to the opera and people told us, you're crazy. You're never going to fill the hall. Meanwhile, we had people scalping tickets outside. Someone wanted to offer me tickets as I was walking in preparing for the show. So we really had just an amazing, amazing time. And I hope that in a small way, we can say that we contributed to the revival of Chazanut, to the ongoing promotion of cantorial music.
Yes, and there is a future. Look, I believe the wheel goes around. It should be on the upswing. We're going to be doing a concert in a few months from now, and it could be the start of something good. And I'm looking forward to that really with great anticipation. I know it's going to be a great concert. When I say concert, a great
davening. It's interesting about cantorial music, and I certainly on our events, I think when we used to poll people sometimes, you know, we sent out a survey, everybody walked down and they would say, we loved it. Even if one cantor wasn't at his best, there was just some great feeling. So like you said, this is not about how the audience feels. I think part of the challenge is that financially, there's so many charities that need our help. Israel needs our help. And people are like, okay, you know, you're getting in the back of the line. You're not a priority. And it's unfortunate because I don't think people appreciate enough how much cantorial music can inspire and make a difference in people's lives.
I think that the singer gets a certain energy from the crowd. And that's why just singing alone can never compare with singing before 300, 400, 500 people. There's a certain electricity, something in the air that brings out the best of a chazan when that crowd is there. It's a mutual feeling, actually. I think it's very, very important. It's very important to have back in the city. Of course, we always talk about the goal is not just to expose them to chazanis, but is to get them into the shul, to get the cantor into the shul, which is a tough situation. You've got rabbis who resent resent it when a cantor sort of takes over. You know, what's the purpose of going to shul on Shabbos? To hear a cantor, to hear a prayer, or to hear a Devar Torah? Is that the place that you want to have someone teach you? It's the wrong venue. It's the wrong venue. The rabbi should be there championing the chazan and the choir and see him as a partner rather than as a competitor.
Right.
And I know we have a lot of stories of when they say, oh, that cantor, there's some towns in New Jersey. You have Teaneck with 10, 12 Orthodox shuls and not one of them has a regular cantor. Of course, Naftali or Netanel does once or twice a year, and Motzen once or twice a year. That's not enough. It should be ongoing and growing and nothing. Englewood, I mean, the clock seems to rule the situation.
Right. I want to present you the question that was my topic of the last podcast about cantorial music. Here for life, is cantorial music here for life, or is it on life support? What would you say?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, realistically, but I think I'm optimistic. I am optimistic. By the way, you know, it's so interesting how things are beshert. How we met in the first place, Robert Weiss, Debbie Weiss, Robert Weiss calls me and he says, listen, there's a young fella who is going to be at the Karlbach Shul this Friday night giving a lecture on Yesler Rosenblatt, and it's with dinner. So I go, and I'm sitting there next to this young fella who just arrived in this. I said, I'm Charlie Bernhau. Of course, that didn't mean anything to him. He could be Chaim Yankel as far as is concerned. He just came from the other side. I said, look, if I could ever be of any help, just keep me in mind. And then we met months later where your shul was a little against doing a concert of Chazanis. And I went, I said, invite me to the next cantorial meeting. And I said, look, I have all my lists of listeners on the radio show and others. I, this together with some promotion, it's going to be a great success. And reluctantly, they went along with it, and then they had two or three, but of course, it all comes down to money. We're right. interested in getting the word out, and they're interested in money. And that's the conflict that we're always dealing with, you
right.
know, money or what?
It's so interesting. I remember that it was in, I believe, 1997, if I'm not mistaken, or around that time. And it was a Friday night. And I remember meeting you after services, and you said hi, but I didn't know who you were because I was new to the American scene. I
right.
just come to America. But I knew, and I just started my job on the West Side at the Jewish Center. But I always knew I loved Chazanut, and I always knew I wanted to promote it. And what I found about you when I met you was, it's like it was a kindred spirit. Here was somebody who, though there was a few years that divided us, we had the same goal. It wasn't about self-promotion. It was about what could we do for the world. And I have to say, I love the cantors, but some of them are a little difficult to deal with. As we know, performers, it's not necessarily, I can count on my right hand the performers who said thank you or wrote us a letter to thank us after the concert, but it was never about that. It was really about promoting Chazanut. You were so helpful to me at the Jewish Center. We did some wonderful concerts there, including with the late Arya Braun, with Benjamin Muller from Antwerp, Moshe Stern. We had some great nights, so I have to give credit where it's due. We had some great times at the Jewish Center. But the best part was is that when the Jewish Center said, okay, you know, this is as far as we're going with it, we didn't give up, and we decided to go out on our own. And I remember when we formed Cantor's World, it was really a dream. We started off in small concert halls. We went to Merkin. We went to Alice Tully Hall. I remember the first time we filled that. We did an event in 2003. That was one of the... We did two concerts in the same year, one in March and one in December. And at the March one, we brought Cantor Helfgott, who nobody had ever heard of. He was a young kid, and he showed up, didn't know a word of English. I remember I was practicing with him backstage the words, thank you very much. And he kept on saying, thank you very much. And I was like, no, thank you. But it's very hard for an Israeli to say the th. But what I noticed was, and everybody was great that night, when he got up, maybe because he was young and the way he was dressed, he brought so much energy. And people were going crazy at the end of his rendition. And I was like, there's an electricity here. The hall was full. People love this. We have to do this more and more. And so we didn't shut down for the lack of interest. You know, it's just very hard. You go to a hall and you have to pay the union fees. And I think in the opera, if I'm not mistaken, we had to pay $75,000 just to be able to do it on Saturday night or on Sunday night, because the opera is, what do they call it? A dark night on Sunday night, because uh-huh. that's their night where they refresh for the next opera. but it was just magnificent.
Do you remember when we went 5 minutes overtime and they wanted to charge us, what, $20,000?
Right.
Go no. And I never forget the rabbi that was supposed to speak for 5 minutes went on for 20. And I was, I mean, what could I do? Could I go and grab him and say, excuse me, but that was a learning experience for us.
Right, because the Philharmonic especially, their minute starts on the button. So when we were past 10:30 and we only went 7-8 minutes over, we were into the additional half hour, which costs, it was just, there was so much for us to learn, but it was thrilling, really. And like I said, I meet people all the time. I get emails from people that tell me, you just can't forget those concerts. When are you doing them again? When are you doing another Shabbaton? Another great thing that we introduced was the cantorial karaoke.
Yes.
Right? So we did the Saturday night where we had the cantors as judges. And every person in the hall that thought they knew how to sing got up and sang. It wasn't really karaoke. I had Danny of blessed memory on the piano. And I remember one fellow got up and sang, and he was just a disaster. I mean, he didn't know which octave he was in. He didn't know if he was singing in major, minor, Jewish, whatever. But he was a great guy. And then I remember Cantor Motzen said to him, he was a doctor, cardiologist. He said, I highly recommend that you keep your day job. And it was great. It was just, there was such great moments
yes.
that we did together.
There was an elderly man in his 90s, Mr. Ostrowski, I think that was his name. He got up with a big smile on his face and he did a Yiddish song, and it was with such sweetness and such heart. He died a few years later, but his daughter was from Baltimore. There's a group in Baltimore. And when I closed my eyes, I just remember how he got up there and you could just tell he was enjoying himself. It was such such a nice thing that we were able to do, you know.
Right.
It was.
And you know, it's interesting. I remember like Yankee Lemmer was one of the people that we just put up on Saturday night as a surprise. He was a kid. Nobody had heard of him. Zevi Muller. I remember Zevi coming to my office in Brooklyn, and someone had sent him to me, and he started to sing, and I thought I was going to go deaf. I mean, he still has this unbelievable voice. And I was like, you're definitely a winner. Not that I'm the great maven, but, you know, I had a background in it. And we met so many of the cantors that today are considered leading cantors. They passed through our, you know, venture one
right.
way or another.
Such an interesting thing about Yankee. He was interviewed by the Jewish Week at the time when he got the job at Lincoln Square. And they asked him, how did you become involved with Chazanis? And I have the article. It says, I used to sit in the living room with my father every Sunday night and listen to this guy, Charlie Bernhout. And that's how I first became exposed to Chazanis.
Right.
It was to have touched his soul. If I do nothing else in my life, that is just something that I'm so pleased about. To know that you can influence people by just doing the right thing.
Right. And by the way, as we're going down memory lane, I remember when we had the studio on the Lower East Side and you would do these Thursday night shows at midnight, and there were a couple times you couldn't make it and I stood in for you. I remember specifically one evening where I think we did a joint show and the Hasidim from Williamsburg came across the bridge and they came to visit us and brought us food. And it was just, it just, even as I'm thinking of it, it's like it just happened yesterday. And it was, I know it was meaningful to me and I'll never forget it. I'm sure it was to you too. And I think there's so many people out there that just were very touched by what we did.
For sure. I just remember one thing. We sold out the Koussevitzky concert early. And I said to Benny, I said to you, listen, why don't we see if we can have it remote at the shul in Borough Park.
Where he was the chazan.
Where he was the chazan. Now, this was 2 weeks before the concert. And Benny, you got the next day, you already lined up the production, and it was sold out there also. And if we had to have a board and a meeting, oh no, they won't come and whatever, we weren't going to take no for an answer. It was yes, we're going to do it, and it worked out so beautifully. And I always remember how we just had faith and confidence in what we were doing.
Right. I'll just close with two thoughts. One is, I remember having to take a bathroom break in one of the concerts during the time that one of the cantors was singing. I was there in the bathroom and I meet someone who I hear him saying, "Oh, Charlie Burnout, he's amazing. He's funding this entire operation. Yes, he's done so well in real estate. Oh, he must be making so much money." And I was like, this guy means well, but he has no idea what it takes to actually make a concert, because nobody's ever made money just off the concert.
Right.
You need sponsors. And, you know, we had wonderful people, Marshall Wilf and Miles Berger and so many of your friends who you solicited, Yossi Billig.
Billig, yes.
Just incredible. Just without them, we would not have made it. So, first of all, I'm very appreciative for you coming in and to hear your thoughts. And I want to give you the opportunity to close with your thoughts, but also to say thank you on my behalf for everything you have done for Chazanut, because you really deserve so much credit. And thank you on behalf of the listeners, because I know that so many people that listen to this podcast know the name Charlie Burnout, and it will always be synonymous with soul music and Chazanut.
Well, it's a pleasure. And, you know, I always look at you as my son. Because my children are older than you are, and I think it was beshert that we should meet together and work well together. I don't think we've ever had anything where you know, sometimes people, their egos get in the way a good thing gets ruined. Didn't happen. Everything we did together was, let's go, let's do it, and we did it, and that was such a pleasure. And Benny, I'm looking forward to more in the future. Maybe someone who's listening right now will give us a call and say, "Hey, listen, I wanted to help you guys," and that could be the beginning of something new. But we just have to keep trying.
100%, Charlie. Thank you for coming in. To all the listeners, thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you again 2 weeks from now in the cantor's chair, and to continue promoting this wonderful, special form of soul music.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to In the Cantor's Chair, with new episodes every other Tuesday. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at In the Cantor's Chair, and on Twitter at The Cantor's Chair for show photos and the latest updates. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And, as always, pray and pay it forward.